This is the BBC.
Welcome to Everyday Ethics, our weekly ethical download from the BBC with me, Roisin McCauley. On this week's podcast, the shortage of vocations to religious ministry, why it's happening and what it means for the future. But first,
in Christ alone, who took on flesh, fullness of God in heaven. Scorned by the ones he came to save, till on the cross as Jesus died.
You'll all have recognised that in Christ Alone, written by Keith Getty, who's just come into the studio at Sunday Sequence. Keith divides his time between Northern Ireland and Nashville and is this week appearing tonight at the New Horizons Christian Festival in Coleraine. He is, of course, so well known, he hardly needs an introduction.
Good morning.
Welcome to Sunday Sequence, Keith.
What brings you
back to Northern Ireland this time, apart from New Horizons?
Oh, no, we come back every summer. We live in Nashville. We still tell people we commute. So we're like students that never grew up. So we come back for the summer to the beach, to the house, to home and to family. And so we've just had a wonderful summer. We've been here all of June and all of July, and we leave on Tuesday again with very, very sad hearts, I have to say, especially when the weather is this beautiful and Port Stewart Strand is quite as exquisite as it has been.
Well, you probably brought the good weather from Nashville. Do you think you did?
Well, we're trying to claim that. We're trying to get a few bonus points there. But it's just been, it's amazing how it does just lift the soul, you know, lift the spirit. And and as I said, the coastline and everything about this country is so beautiful, and it just opens that out even more. And I've always felt, as a musician and as a human being, I am Northern Irish. I'm Irish. I'm a person of this soil. Our music doesn't sound American, and so this time of the year is always a special time of the year, and I find it's always poignant as well. So I'll never forget the summer. It's been a wonderful time.
Have you been inspired to write something?
Yeah, I think at multiple levels. I'm inspired to think. And also we've had our fourth daughter, Talia, here for the first time. So I've got to walk the beach. We did my first walking of the beach with all five of the girls. All five of us did that, which was great. And so it's just been special. And just getting ideas for the future and thinking a lot. So.
And how do you do the kind of work-life balance? Because you have your wife, Kristen, who, of course, works with you. Then you have four daughters. But you're also a full-time composer, businessman to a degree.
Business is really just the order of your priorities in life, you know. And for us, for me, I think God is much more interested in my character and how I treat my wife, how I treat my kids, how I treat those who are close to us, and how I treat those who we encounter in a day-to-day level. So I think those are the things we care about, and we make those a priority. And then after that, we try to use our gifts as well as we can, but we have to make sure that it's so easy for all of us, isn't it, that the tail wags the dog. Do you know what I mean? And the tyranny of the urgent, I think, was what one poet described it as. And I think that often can overtake us. So that's a constant challenge. And actually coming back here in the summer is great, because when you live in the middle of Nashville, you know, you're in the middle of where the entire music industry is going, where the entire church music world really is centered now. And so to get back here and just breathe, I think really helps too.
And inspiring?
Oh, yeah. No, very, very much so. But because I think, you know, I remember the very, very first year we left Ireland, and we were still kind of sad hearts, but also very excited about America and everything being bigger and better, and opportunities, it seemed, were endless.
And there were just the two of you, presumably.
Yeah, that's right. The very start was just the two of us. And I remember sitting down at an event, and a very well-known Christian leader said to me, "You know how blessed you are that you were born in Northern Ireland." And I didn't even know I'd ever been there, or never mind or heard of it or anything, you know. And he said, "Well, the part of the world you come from," he says, your folk music is the easiest folk music for groups of people to sing." And I thought it was a remarkable thing to say, because, you know, and it's almost that God has allowed us to be born here with such beautiful music and beautiful imagery and beautiful poetry and beautiful hymnody in our history that allows us to express music in a way that groups of people can sing. And actually, it disappoints me, to be honest, when I come back here and visit churches or people who are Irish but trying to sound American, or trying to sound like from somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? To me, we're missing the richness of what our folk music and our hymn traditions and our church traditions have brought us. Because it's a music that grandparents and grandkids alike can sing together. And that's what church music is all about. It's about being family and getting to sing to the Lord together, to each other, to sing hymns in our family, to sing hymns in our churches. Many of our great heroes of this island, you know, from St. Patrick on to Amy Carmichael, you know, were empowered by the songs that they sung in their homes.
What is the secret then of Irish music? What is it about it that allows it to travel? I know it's travelled all over the world. It's travelled to Appalachia. I hear Irish musicians in Italy, France, all over the place. But what's the secret?
I don't know. Well, I mean, sociologically, of course, our speaking voices, you and I are going up and down as we talk here. Mm-hmm. And they don't do that in BBC Manchester. And so, you know, that there's part of it is just sociological, and we're very passionate people. That's a very special thing that we have in life, you know, and you see it in every part of life. And Schmidt did it by translating the Irish passion into rugby sports science to make the rugby team so great. And even you see the success of TV shows that have got over the last year that have gone out from here. You know, they've taken Irish humour, Irish things, and just opened them to the world. And I think there's an infectiousness. So I think that's helped me a lot. And I think that helps us to write melodies that allow the whole congregation to sing. So many of our churches today are divided unnecessarily between young and old, or traditionalists and contemporary, or whatever, or theological and non-theological, or experiential and confessional. And actually, you know, beautiful melodies can exist. Our melodies exist by themselves. They're passed on by a mother singing to a child. And so the melody has to be good enough or you forget it. You know, the arrangement and the production doesn't really matter. You know, and so when we hear In Christ Alone, like the hymn you played, sung in China by a persecuted church, or we hear a version of it in Dutch, in Flemish, or we hear a version of it being done by a youth arena in Texas, or by a Hispanic church in Rio, then they're all totally, totally different versions. You know what I mean? And it's beautiful. And so that's, I think
the
that's
melody
exciting.
Carries it.
Yeah.
What's the next big thing coming up for you?
Well, first of all, my wife wants you to know we're having no more kids. Okay, she has decided that is over. I guess with music, the minute I've taken on a 4 or 5 year project to create a modern psalter and hymnal. So I'm setting out all of the psalms, going back to the psalms, which I think, you know, are the voice of the soul. I encourage people anywhere, you know, whether you're a person of faith or not, to get into the psalms and understand how they bear open human emotion. And point them to God, and point us to God in ways that are fresh and beautiful. And that's been, I decided I wanted to take 150 days, and I'm almost halfway in my working career now, if God gives us a normal lifespan. And so I wanted to say, let's go in at halftime, having gone through all the Psalms, mm-hmm. and created a hymnal. And so that's important. And we have the Sing Conference coming up next month, and we continue with the Christmas show. But the big news is being announced for the first time anywhere, that 15th of June next year, we return to Ireland in the Odyssey Arena. We've never played the Odyssey. We've always done the series of nights at Waterfront. So we're coming to the Odyssey. We're going to have a choir of 8,000 people. We're turning the place into a round, and Chris and I will be in the middle for a mammoth night of singing and celebration.
8,000 Irish people, or 8,000 from all over the world?
Well, they could be from anywhere. It's really for the people of here.
Can anybody join?
Yes, anybody can join. There's 1,000 in the choir. It'll be opening for audition soon. You can find out through Getty Music. And so that's pretty exciting, and we'll be doing that. But I wanted you to know before we got to New Horizons tonight and told the people, so you got in first.
Keith, thank you very much indeed. It was absolutely lovely to have you on Sunday Sequence. Now, the closure of the seminary attached to St. Malachy's College in Belfast has highlighted the lack of vocations to the Catholic priesthood. That prompted us to ask how all the churches in Ireland are faring in these more secular times, and how they can attract people to work in ministry. To discuss that, we're joined now by the Reverend Andrew Faulkner, convener of the Ministerial Studies and Development Committee for the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, the Reverend Canon Dr. Will Murphy, Church of Ireland Director of Ordnance for Connor Diocese, Anne-Marie Whelan from Vacation Ireland, and from Vacation Ireland, and Evangelization Officer with the Sisters of Bon Secours, and Father Ulton McGowan, who is about to begin his new role as Vacation Director for the Catholic Church in the Kilmore Diocese. You're all very welcome to Sunday Sequence. If I could begin with you, Ulton, can you define for us what a vocation is? What is the call to ministry? And how does one recognise it?
Well, Roisin, I think a vocation ultimately is a calling from God. And I think those who particularly experience a call to vocation, to ministry, in my experience, it often comes rather early in life. I was at a gathering recently of vocations directors, and people shared their story, and it was an extraordinary pattern how at a very early age people felt this calling. Now, of course, people can ignore the calling and other things get in the way, but there's often something there pulling at the heart, this extraordinary and mysterious call from God.
Now, Anne-Marie, you're in Vocations Ireland. How many people at the moment do you think are answering a call to ministry, a call to God?
Well, I suppose I think our challenge is that some people don't actually recognise that call there. Father Alton spoke about that pull from the heart. And working with young people, we would say that a lot of our young people don't even recognise what that might look like, what that pull internally might feel. So a lot of our work is actually starting at a very low base in getting them to recognise what God might be calling them to in life and getting them to recognise what that call might feel like. So a lot of our work is actually, if you like, starting even, you know, at a very early stage in young people's lives, because, you know, the challenge to them nowadays is that it's not cool, it's not something that that they're growing up with. They're not familiar maybe with nuns, sisters, brothers, in their peers. So a lot of our work is starting at a very early stage with them in helping them to grow in faith, first of all, so that they can recognise whatever it is that God is calling them to.
And how many people at the moment are in training to be either training for the priesthood or indeed are going on to become nuns?
I don't have any figures for religious life at the moment, I'm afraid. But I suppose we generally don't look at figures, because I suppose we're in a different mindset nowadays. We know that the numbers are a lot less than they would have been 20 years ago, but we can't compare life nowadays to life 20 years ago. We ran a piece of research last year looking at religious vocations in Ireland, both the challenges and the opportunities. And I mean, the biggest challenge that came out of that piece of research, and it was done with vocations directors, guidance counsellors, chaplains, young religious and other people that work in promoting vocations. The main challenge is, it seems, the current social climate in relation to church life, and also the lack of peer support. So overall, the social climate at the moment doesn't lend itself for it being the right thing to do. People are not being encouraged to become part of an institutional church, and they're not finding the peer support. So I suppose a lot of our work is helping them to find that there are people that they can talk to, that there are, we would run programs helping them to know the language even, because a lot of the time we as church people, I suppose, use a lot of church language that they're not familiar with. They don't know what the word discernment means. They sometimes don't even know what the word vocation means.
I'm wondering if that's the experience also of our guests from the Presbyterian Church and from the Church of Ireland. Will, from what's the experience of the Church of Ireland, the social climate and so on?
Certainly the changes have taken place that have been referred to there. I go back to my own training, which was handwritten essays. Now it's all online, computers, distance learning. So the whole format for training has changed. Church of Ireland 10 years ago introduced a foundation access course, which was in preparation for going forward for selection. People remain in their work, but they go and take part in this foundation course, which is all done by distance learning, and that is to encourage them academically and to encourage them in their vocation to realise, is ministry for me?
And Andrew, what's the experience in the Presbyterian Church? Are you experiencing a drop in numbers in the call to ministry?
Our numbers in PCI have fluctuated historically. I remember sitting on the committee 6 or 7 years ago, and we were debating whether to have a quota. We were training too many people for the numbers of jobs that there were at the end. The last 3 or 4 years, we've dropped down to single figures again. So we're not complacent. We want to try and keep encouraging people to consider full-time Christian ministry. Lots of people are still doing that. We had a ministry taster day just in December there, where we had a few serving ministers and people from the college just explaining what the process was and what life in ministry was like. We had about 65 people come to that. And we would anticipate probably 12, 15 or so of those applying this year for ministry. It's a long process, and that that impacts the whole thing. There's about 6 years of training that takes place before people actually arrive at a call into a church. But those numbers are okay for us at the moment. We wouldn't want to keep them in single figures for the next 3 or 4 years. That would cause us an issue. But we think that there's plenty of people who are showing an interest in Christian ministry, and we're trying to encourage people. I think what's been said there is really right. There's an internal call. We want to feel that God is calling us to this. But there's such an important role in people encouraging that, the external call of other people saying, I see the gifts and abilities that God has given you, and I can see how God might use you in this.
And you, of course, train women as well, both the Church of Ireland and
do.
The Presbyterian Church. Now, has that helped in terms of numbers?
We would have approximately a third of our candidates would be women, and that has helped certainly in the training. They bring the feminine perspective to all the work and to the study.
Yeah, men and women are eligible on the same basis. There's no discrimination in the Presbyterian Church. We don't have nearly as many women as men applying or training or serving in churches. There's probably all sorts of different reasons for that. We've tried to make it clear just over the last little while that is the case. We did this a little while ago with age profile as well. There was a time when I suppose people thought you had to be 35 or 40 before you could start to train, have a bit of experience in life. We tried to make it very clear that you could come earlier than that, and we would be happy to accept people in their 20s. We've done that with the female issue recently too, just to make it clear to people that we would be happy to accept applications from women on the same basis as men, and we certainly would treat them in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Ulton, traditionally in the Catholic Church, as I understand it, people would have started training in the ministry much younger than in their 30s and 40s. So what is the age profile like now?
Yeah, like I myself, like many priests would have gone straight in at the age of 18, which I think in today's world would be rather young. So most of those who are entering seminary now, they've already been to college or university. They may have worked for a few years. So those who are coming in are certainly in their mid to late 20s and even older than that.
And I noticed that Andrew used the word job. Now, of course, we think jobs for life. But is there any sense in which a ministry has to be for life? Could it be, you know, that one could give, say, 5 years to God and then say, I'll go back to my other job and so on? I'd be interested in your reactions to that as an idea.
I think it's a very interesting idea, because one of the challenges in this whole area of attracting vocations is that young people today, they don't really believe in lifelong commitments. They will change jobs many times, they will have many different careers. They want to travel from place to place, and the idea of giving your whole life to something is something that doesn't sit very easily with this generation. We see it obviously in priesthood, and we see it in marriage as well, and I think perhaps we have to engage with that particular attitude of contemporary society, and I think there's some merit perhaps in pursuing your idea there, Roisin.
I think one of the things that we would come up against with that, though, is that we would want to spend a long time training someone. We think this is a really important job, and we don't want to do that in a light kind of way. And so when you invest a lot of time in training and giving people experience, we want to then be able to see them perform and serve God for a long period after that. And we do, I think, within the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, we certainly see young people coming in and being so excited about Jesus, being excited about what Jesus has done for them and how he can impact other people's lives, that it can be a very fulfilling and rewarding thing. Now, it's not that everyone spends 45 years in ministry. That isn't the case. But there are some people who've served for a long time, and they've really seen God do tremendous work in people's lives, and that keeps you going day after day, and perhaps in a different way to a different kind of job might.
Anne-Marie, how do you engender the kind of enthusiasm that Andrew's talking about in people who might or indeed might not be that much interested in a call, in a vocation?
Well, I think it's already been said there. It's having that, they're not seeing in their daily lives the peer support, maybe from family or friends, but getting them involved with communities, with like-minded other young people, having them see that what they're experiencing, actually, it's not so unusual and that there are other people feeling the same thing. One of the things that would have come out from our research would have been engaging them in discernment programs, having them, we would run a Samuel program over the space of 6 months where they would meet once a month with like-minded young people. So over that 6 months, they get to not only discover what discernment is, discover how they can put God into their decision making, but they're also building a little community for themselves of like-minded young people. And you talk there about maybe, you know, short-term ministry or, yes, you know, they live in a different world today. But fostering their gifts, their talents, encouraging all of that, we would talk about a call within a call. So they may take up one type of ministry now, but through that and through encouragement through that, we would hope that then that they'd move on to another type of ministry from that.
Will, you mentioned, you know, kind of outreach, learning, training, online stuff. But to what extent is that does that counter the idea that you could be with people talking about God, talking about your call, getting the kind of peer support that Anne-Marie has mentioned?
A student in the Theological Institute in their third year will be ordained as a deacon, and their study will be 1 week per month, and the other 3 weeks will be in a parish. So they're integrated into a parish for 1 year as a deacon in preparation for their first curacy, which will follow after that. So they are involved fully in the life of a parish, which is giving them all the support and all the training that they will need when they then become a curate after that third year.
And do you ever find people who go into a parish as a deacon, say, and then suddenly say, oh my heavens, this is stressful. I don't know if I can continue. That it is a burden.
It's stressful for everybody. It is a very tough vocation, especially in the present day. But people, I believe, are well trained for it in the Church of Ireland, and they're meeting the needs of the parishes in a spectacular way. They're excellent people coming forward.
If you've just joined us on Sunday Sequence, we're discussing the difficulty of calls to ministry in the modern age and a possible lack of vocations as a result. What do you, and a reminder of our panel, by the way, which is the Reverend Andrew Faulkner, the Reverend Canon Dr. Will Murphy, Anne-Marie Whelan and Father Alton McGowan. I wanted to ask all of you what you think is most deters people from the idea that they might be hearing a call?
Yeah, I think there can be a lot of different things. In our context, I think the long process does inhibit people. The 6 years of training before they really get into a church of their own, we think those things are really important, and yet that does inhibit some people from applying. I think as well as that, there are lots of other ways of serving within the local church, and we've sort of talked about this already. There are lots of people who perhaps in a generation ago would have gone into pastoral ministry, who instead of going into youth and children's work or family work or women's work and all sorts of different ways of ministering within a local church. The other thing is, we don't want to pull people away from the place where God is using them. And it may well be that working in an office, working in the BBC, working, living at home might be the place that God has given for someone to be and to serve. We wouldn't want to pull them away from that and see Christian ministry as a step up for them, as if they're doing something then of a higher level. We want to discern with people just where God is using them and wanting them to be.
And Will, you spoke of it being a difficult. I mean, what do you think the deterring factor is?
I believe that the Church of Ireland has taken on board all these issues, in that we're introducing a totally new method of training for ordained local ministry. And this will begin actually next month with the first students. A parish will identify a man or a woman whom they feel would be an excellent support to the local rector. They will be trained locally. They will remain in their vocation, in their job, and they will be ordained for that parish only. that's an exciting new format of ministry. It'll mean people stay in their work, but they'll be available on Sundays and where they have extra time to minister to a congregation during the week. Ordained local ministry, which begins next month.
And Ulton, how many roles might there be available in the Catholic Church for people who have perhaps a call but maybe are deterred from becoming a priest? Because there is a sense that the Catholic Church is much more hierarchical and the priest is the one who really counts, and it's not quite as democratic, let's say, as the Presbyterian Church. Am I being fair?
Oh, no. I think certainly would be a perception of that, but in reality, at parish level, it can be quite democratic. There's been a huge amount of change in the last number of years. Most parishes nowadays would have a parish pastoral council, and the pastoral council's role is to assist in ministry at parish level, and there are parish finance committees, which are very much decision-making committees as well. And many parishes now employ pastoral workers who will work alongside the priests in the work of sacramental preparation and so forth. So there's a whole new array of ministries available. And certainly, as your previous speakers mentioned, some who perhaps would in the past have been into ministerial priesthood are now content to go into those other forms of ministry. So there are a huge variety of opportunities. And one of the other things that's happened in the Catholic Church in Ireland in the last number of years is the opportunity to become a permanent deacon. This was another opportunity to serve that wouldn't have been available up until a few years ago, and many dioceses have embraced the opportunity to ordain permanent deacons, many of whom will be married people.
And are any of them women?
No, I'm afraid not, unfortunately, and I suppose that's a debate that is ongoing, and I think there may be an openness in Rome to changing that. I know there is a commission looking into it at the moment. But I think if there was a change there, and if it was open to women, it would be a terrific development.
What would most help in encouraging people to recognise a call? What would, from each of you, if you could each tell me in turn, what would you do if you could change something or introduce something? What would it be, Will?
I go back to my own call into ministry. I was working quite happily in a university at Coleraine in the laboratories there. I became a lay reader in the local parish church in Port Stewart, and I found that although I enjoyed my work thoroughly in the university, my Sunday work, which was simply taking services, preaching occasionally, that was God's call into my life, and it became clear to me simply through participation in a local church, enjoying my work in the university as I did, that God was calling me in a different direction, and I followed that call.
How much encouragement did you get?
None.
And you still did it?
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to say something similar, but then you said you got no encouragement. I was a teacher for 9 years and felt called into ministry. The influence of two people in particular was so vital to that, of just recognising some gifts and abilities and encouraging along the pathway. One of the things we're trying to do in my church in Sloane Street in Lisburn is to bring interns in, people who are doing apprenticeships within the church. So this is a voluntary thing. We pay them expenses. We send them to Cornhill in Belfast to do some Bible teaching training. And for 2 years, they come alongside us and they see a little bit about what ministry life is like without any compulsion to go on. There are no obligations at the end of that. Our first ministry apprentice came and didn't feel called at the end of it. The second one has and is applying this year. That's really helpful. I think the only other thing that I would say is the more that we see that work of Jesus in our life, Jesus called his disciples, come and follow me, leave that old life behind. That doesn't necessarily mean leaving our jobs and going into a different vocation. But when we see the excitement of the life that God has for us, when we see the confidence that we can have in what Jesus calls us to, then wherever God calls us, we'll be excited to follow him and know that that's the best way for us. And the more that we see that and see the beauty of Jesus in that, the more that we'll see people following in those ways.
Ulton, what, to your mind, would most encourage people to think about a vocation? I mean, I don't imagine apprentices in the Catholic Church are particularly feasible, but what might be an encouragement?
I think in the broadest possible terms, one of the things that we need to do nowadays is people live in such a fast-paced, connected world. There's very little time for reflection. There's very little time for quiet. So perhaps one of the services we could provide for people generally is to create spaces of quietness, and from a very young age to encourage quiet times in people's lives for reflection. And I think it's in the quietness that we often hear the voice of God calling us. And then I think we really need to help people to encounter Jesus in a personal way so that they can very much hear the call of Jesus in their hearts. And that call may be to priesthood, but it can be to a whole other variety of ways of serving. And I think we need to work really, really hard at that. That's going to be the great challenge in the 21st century.
Anne-Marie?
Yeah, I would agree with everything that everybody has said. And I suppose from a personal point of view, I mean, I'm, you know, a lay person working for a religious order, and I can share with the young people, I suppose, my journey, my experience of the encouragement that I've had along the way. I mean, I worked in a financial institution for many years, and then I felt this call, this pull to ministry. And I suppose engaging with young people and sharing with them, helping them to figure out, as we have already said, whatever it is that God is calling them to, helping them, you know, to know that there are people out there that they can talk to, that they can engage with. We have all these programs, the Samuel program, Come and See weekends, living in community. There are lots of opportunities for them to come and see, literally, what it would be like to live in religious life, in priesthood. And all of us who already have had that encouragement, who are already faith-filled, it's up to us to continue to share that encouragement with our young people and help them to know that you know that it is a possibility.
A final brief question to all of you. How optimistic are you that you can increase the number of vocations and that people will continue to follow a call?
Reading through the Book of Revelation in private study with all its mysteries and enigmas and symbolism, the overarching principle of it is God is still on the throne and the church will survive and into the future.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Jesus is king of the church. He says he will build his church. My confidence is not in ministers or ministry. Yeah. It's in the Jesus who runs it. The one thing we must avoid is giving the impression that we're trying to bring people in to sustain our churches. Mm-hmm. The Presbyterian Church in Ireland is not the end goal. Our end goal is to see Jesus glorified. And when we see that, people will respond to it.
And Alton?
I think we have to be hopeful as Christians. We are ultimately people of hope, and our hope is in Christ. But I think we also need to very carefully discern why people aren't responding to the call. And I think there's a challenge to us there as well. Why are people not responding? And we can't ignore that reality either. And we need to think very carefully about how we go forward.
And briefly, Anne-Marie?
And we must continue to engage with our young people, just as Father Alton has said. Listen to them. Hear their side of the story. Why are they not considering this as a way of life? And to fill in those gaps that are in those life, in their lives, and to help them to ultimately grow in faith with a God that we know loves them and that we know has a purpose for every single person.
Well, thank you all very much indeed for a very interesting discussion. Thank you, Andrew Faulkner, Canon Will Murphy, Anne-Marie Whelan and Alton McGowan. Thank you. You've been listening to Everyday Ethics from the BBC with me, Roisin McCauley. You'll find more details on the BBC website.